This week on the Heartland Pod, I have an opening statement about threats to thought. Then in Talkin' Politics, we get into book banning backfiring, Vicky's crocodile tears, Kirsten's attention grab, the Democratic Party's relationships with the Heartland, but we're going to kick it off with some victory laps from our midterm predictions. Welcome back to the Heartland Pod. My name is Adam Summer, and I am your host. This is the regular Monday show, our Talkin' Politics show, with myself and my co-hosts Rachel Parker and Sean Diller, who will join us in just a moment. Together, we bring topics of the week with a special focus on the Heartland as we bring our middle-out approach to politics and work to change the conversation. That includes our Friday Flyover View headline show hosted by Kevin Smith, along with rotating shows throughout the week, depending on what week it is. And starting January 5th, 2023, you will start getting at least twice a month the Dirt Road Democrat with Jess Piper. We're very excited for that and very proud to have Jess joining us as one of our hosts, and looking forward to that. In fact, I can say we have scheduled Jess to be on our last show of this year, so she's going to join us not this week, but the week after. So going into Christmas, that'll be our last show. You can support what we do by leaving a rating and review on the podcast app of your choice, and please do that. And Apple users right now, after we migrated everything over this past fall, we need to rebuild that, so it's very helpful to us. It helps put us up in the ratings and everything like that, so please scroll down. Even if you've done it before, go down, give a five-star review, and leave us something. You know, type something up there. Tell some folks why they should listen to the show. It's very helpful. You can also follow us on your preferred social media app with at the Heartland Pod, and you can support our work financially over at Patreon, as well as by going to heartlandpod.com and just clicking the Patreon link, and you can sign up there. Every level that we have has some kind of a perk, including a new special members-only curated news feed that we've just launched this past week. All of that stuff is kind of in beta right now, so we're still learning how to do it, but that's going to be growing and getting better and better as we have some interaction with folks, so get signed up over on heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link, and get signed up today and join us for the extra stuff. And remember, at the $5 a month level or higher, you also get extra episodes. So sign up over there, heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link, and we really, really appreciate all the supporters over there. It's great to get to interact with all of you, and we have lots more to come. All right, I have an opening statement, and then Rachel and Sean are going to join me for Talkin' Politics. The more time you spend reading about the men often called the founders, and the deeper you get into their own writing, there's one theme that reoccurs with such regularity and such consistency, and is not limited to one or two of these historical names, but is nearly universal. Certainly among those whose names we can recall in a moment, Jefferson, Washington, Adams, Madison, Franklin, an ever-present theme focused on the one freedom essential to all else, that freedom which, without it, no others can truly exist, because their existence is necessarily colored by and influenced by that core fundamental freedom. In its most simple form, it is the freedom of thought, the freedom to carry an idea, express that idea, and share that idea without the state authority judging that idea or punishing you for sharing it. With the so-called Twitter files, lots of folks who enjoy using the word freedom to describe a cultural requirement to agree with their beliefs have taken an offensive stance that everything that has happened is an affront to that freedom we find enshrined in the First Amendment. Yet these same folks seem more than content with laws and systems designed to provide for governmental financial protection and public funding of religious institutions, something the founders denounced again and again and again. Thomas Jefferson said, "I am for freedom of religion and against all maneuvers to bring about a legal ascendancy of one sect over another." It's not hard to imagine what Jefferson would have thought of public funds being used to support otherwise private religious institutions. As church attendance wanes across America, some have weaponized its message and are moving consistently forward with a desire to install a theocratic empire no different than the Iranian system, all in the name of the second coming of Jesus Christ. I know. I was taught these things as a child, not maliciously, very innocently seeming. taught the words, taught the verbiage, taught the songs. This is and has been a very real thing. It's not new, but right now it is very loud and its influence can be seen far more easily than in years past. Private think tanks like Americans for Prosperity and similar far-right organizations are pushing a dangerous thought which, if implemented, runs counter to the fundamental founding of America. The United States of America should have a foundation free from the influence of clergy. George Washington said that. Christianity neither is nor ever was part of the common law. Thomas Jefferson said that. The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries. That's James Madison. They knew that the end result of religious rule is not peace, but is violence. It has been for all of time. It continues today. We see it continued with the clashes between Israel and Palestine. When the foundation of a government requires adherence to belief, that belief quickly becomes the pretense and justification for the violence, a reason to purify. The practice of religion, holding a sincerely held personal belief, these are not bad things. Don't hear what I'm not saying. Plenty, if not the vast majority of believers of all religions, are perfectly peaceful. It is only when that belief is turned towards our neighbors as a requirement that the change occurs. Going forward, it will be incumbent on all, and in particular, those who share the core religious beliefs with such extremists, to be vigilant and to continue to heed the words of Jefferson, who said it best. Millions of innocent men, women, and children, since the introduction of Christianity, have been burnt, tortured, fined, and imprisoned, yet we have not advanced one inch towards uniformity. What has been the effect of coercion? To make one half the world fools and the other half hypocrites. To support roguery and error all over the earth. Coercion of thought. It is directly anathema to the basic foundation of freedom. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say so. Freedom of consciousness. It is the core freedom. It is what all of it is built on. And we must stay vigilant to threats to thought. Now here's Talkin' Politics.
Talkin' Politics.
All right, we are here for Talkin' Politics. I've got Rachel Parker. I've got Sean Diller. And we're going to have a fun show. We've got some good topics. But we're going to kick it off with some victory laps. So we'll do our normal introductions here. I had a good but busy week. Got to get out and do an interview at a little barbecue joint in Independence that'll come out next week with Representative Robert Sauls from Missouri State House. We had a great meeting there. And tonight I am sipping on, I'm back to the lemon water. I'm back to it. I'm having an easy night. And so here we go. Rachel Parker, how about you? How you doing? How was the week? What you sipping on?
The week was really good. Hi everybody, good to see you guys. I'm sipping on water. I was I'm kind of blowing it out a little bit because next year is going to be a little bit of a drier year. I went a little bit. I didn't go crazy, you guys. I don't have a drinking problem. I just have an age thing going on, and so I was like, "Who?" Like I suddenly looked at myself in the mirror last night. I was like, "Woman, who do you think you've turned into?" So anyway, I did have.
You had a lot of justification moments this year.
I did. Like, I mean, it's still just
time
like,
to drink.
Yeah, it's still just like, I think like when you know, when you're in a household like ours and you know, you have another kind of 2020 winter ahead of you, especially because of all the RSV and all these like other crazy infections that are going on and the ICUs are filling up. I'm like, all right, social distancing, masks, and nobody's coming over to the house again. Here we go.
Right.
So, yeah. So it does make one try to entertain yourself at home. So anyway, it was a fun night. We watched some soccer today. There's a little global
good soccer
event going
today.
On.
Really good soccer today.
Yeah, really crazy quarterfinal. I say that like I ever watch it. I don't. But it was really fun. And I'm excited that St. Louis is gonna have one of our own. So anyway, mm-hmm. I'm sipping on water is what I'm doing.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that England France game was bananas. It was so good.
So good, right?
Yeah. Sean Diller. How about you, man? How's the week? How you doing? What you sipping on?
I'm doing well. Thanks. The week was good. It's like Christmas time around here, and yeah. I have a 4-year-old, 4 and a half. So she's like just elated about everything. Down the block in our neighborhood, there's like a Santa today, and like decorating your own cookies. Wow. And, you know, it's like last year, I think she had no idea who Santa was or like anything about it. And then this year, this will never happen again for sure. She was so excited to go up and talk to him. But she was so nervous that she wanted to like hold on to my thumb and bring me over.
Yeah.
And she didn't even want to tell Santa what she wanted. She wanted me to tell him. And she, you know, I'm not very materialistic at all. And neither is she. It's great. And so she wants an old timey alarm clock with two bells on top.
That's awesome.
I really wish I had one. I had one. It was an Elgin and it was like a pink Bakelite plastic shell thing and had the two. I wish I still had it. I would totally give it to you. Sorry.
It's so excellent that you can get her what she wants most for Christmas from a thrift shop.
Right.
Like that just, that's
yeah, that's peak dealer right there. That's peak dealer, for sure.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah. And my mom's in town. So I just had a huge meal. And so I feel a little bit weird. Like I usually just eat like cold oatmeal and carrots. Like, it's pretty Spartan, you know? So I just had a massive like bacon cheeseburger.
Stop.
Cold oatmeal and carrots.
What did you just say?
You know, classic. Loud? The classic combo.
Right. I
love it when Sean says things like, you know how like everybody does that?
When you tag on the end of cold oatmeal and carrots.
That's what it does.
No, nobody knows.
A PBJ. Right. No, but
I'm just sad that like I can't just run dinner over to your house every couple times we flew here to see this man.
That's good. It's kind of
so, so you ate like a normal person because your mom's
right burger
down.
And fries. Yeah, and I feel like I'm probably going to be pretty weird on this podcast.
So awesome. Normally, like you're just tired and completely like sugar crashed and like hopped up on caffeine, and now you're actually like digesting food and you don't know how to make thoughts and words happen together.
It's true, right? I feel like I'm going to fall asleep right here. Yeah.
Well, let's find out. Let's do
lots
some
of coffee.
Let's do some victory laps. Midterm predictions.
Yes.
And I think it's just all of them. Did we just get it all right? Did we miss? I don't think we missed.
Well, I think Rachel did think that JD Vance, because he's such a
no. That was my. I was. I'm not. I hope.
Maybe you're right.
Beyond hope.
Oh, that was the
Yeah,
happen
I picked
one.
Tim Ryan as like my underdog, and as like I wanted him. I wanted to believe that he might because it made me feel better.
Yeah, I don't know that any of our underdogs. I don't know. I think I picked Laura Kelly as an underdog, but that was kind of an easy one.
I picked Cortez Masto, right? And we were a little out on a limb, but yeah, I think we got them all right. And like the overall outcome of like, you know, Democrats pick up one seat.
Yeah, we got the 51. Yeah.
I remember like distinctly having that conversation really early in the year that maybe even like right after I joined the podcast. I feel like it was like one of the first conversations we had when I was like officially on board that I remember like Sean and I saying at this. I remember saying like, I don't know. I think they're going to pick up a seat in the Senate, which they kind of haven't now, technically.
Yeah, we'll
but anyway, we'll get to that in a second. But and I remember Sean saying like, yeah, me too. And then at some point we both said like, we all three of us were on the same page with, even if they lose the House, which they probably will, it's not going to be this bloodbath.
Right. And it wasn't.
And I remember like at some point we were talking about like the news coverage of it and how just pessimistic and cynical the news are, the media already was about it. And that we could turn like saying that Biden was going to get a shellacking or a drubbing or whatever into a drinking game where we'd all be hammered.
Yeah.
And then, and then being like, he probably won't get, it probably isn't going to be nearly as drastic. And then as soon as the Supreme Court ruined America, we were like, oh, it's like, this is going to be the issue. And we called it all.
We were there. So much so I put my money where all of our mouths were. And I'm showing you guys my predicted account, which is a cash value of $251, because that was the bet that I made. I put down, I don't know, like $40, and I bought, that the Republicans would control the House and that the Democrats would control the Senate as my, payout, and it paid out handsomely. So I'm going to take that $250 and, Papa need a new pair of shoes. So at least one. I can get a couple pair of shoes for that. So pretty sweet.
I am so glad I've thus far resisted the temptation to bet on politics. And I think I always will, because I like getting them right when I don't have money on the line. And I think getting them wrong, I can just forget about when I get them wrong now.
Yeah, so there's a scene in Rounders where Matt Damon is explaining to the girlfriend that's leaving him, like, how frustrating it is that she thinks it's gambling, because he's like, the same people make the final table every year. Why does this seem like gambling to you? Like, if you know the answers, it's not gambling.
It's true.
It's just investing at that point.
It's a lark.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Wait,
here.
Sean has one more victory lap to do,
though.
I don't know. What was it?
I believe that that Adam and I were so confident that a certain piece of very important bipartisan legislation was going to get through the Senate.
That's right.
Before the end of November. And Sean was like, "You're high, girl. They're gonna sneak it in at the end of the year before the lame duck session." And I was like, "No, dude, it's already like out of committee. It's totally gonna be whatever." And you were like, "Uh huh."
Yeah, sure. take a circle on us.
Yeah, go ahead, lap it.
No, it's the Electoral Vote Count Act, the much ballyhooed Electoral Vote Count Act. And yeah, I mean, it had 11 or 12 Republican co-sponsors a couple months ago before the election even. And so it wouldn't have been crazy if it passed before the elections. But yeah, it seemed like a perfect lame duck thing for me. I didn't know that they were going to pass this marriage equality bill first in the lame duck. Yeah. I think a lot of people were a little surprised by that. I mean, you know, after they announced it, and then they announced that they had the votes and we're going to do this. And, you know, I think people weren't necessarily surprised about it, because like, it takes a ton of work to do this stuff. So they did that. And then they've got a couple of must pass bills coming up, the National Defense Authorization Act and debt ceiling stuff. And yeah, we'll see if they do the Electoral Vote Count Act. I said they would do it closer to Christmas than the election. And so hopefully they still do it, and hopefully it's like right.
Well, you're there now,
think they probably are going to do it. But you're totally right about the timing.
And Trump's stock is lower now than ever, right. So they will
makes
yeah,
the most
they
sense
do
to do it,
it
now. Yeah, yeah, I think Romney just came out today and specifically said, "I will not back him in 2024." Period. So
great. Interesting.
Well, let's go to the true or false. All right, the true or false is that book banning will backfire in a spectacular way. I just wanted to write that as alliteratively as I possibly could. The ACLU has already come out. There's a good article in Kansas City Star. ACLU has already come out with a lawsuit. I personally talked with the Missouri Library Directors Group this past, not this week, but the week before, and it is a real concern. Missouri does have, I'm going to call it a half-assed soft attempt to redefine obscenity law with this rule that's been proposed.
Let's keep calling it soft. Yeah,
it's soft. It's soft. And that's all it is. It's an attempt to redefine obscenity, and it was a chance for Jay Ashcroft to get the news cycle, and that was it. So, but the book banning thing is still out there. It's still happening, and it's growing, and it's, I think we're gonna, this coming like 6 months or so, I think it's gonna be a really big deal. So, but I think it's gonna backfire. So, Sean, can you kind of give us the background on why, like, what this article is about and what we're talking about here?
Yeah, totally. So Jay Ashcroft, who is the Secretary of State for the state of Missouri, and I guess like salty that he didn't run for something else. but he's proposing a rule, a Missouri regulation, that no state funds. So when it comes to libraries, he's wanting to really create a lot of ways for parents or just right-wing activists from anywhere to challenge libraries about what books they have. And so this rule, so the Kansas City Star put out a great editorial immediately and was like, "This is going to lead to book banning. This is what it's about," and put them on the defensive. They're like, "Oh no, it's not about that. This is just about holding libraries accountable." And so what they say is like, part of the rule is no state
historically
funds,
of course, unaccountable, the libraries.
Right. Yeah, God. Sorry. Out of control. No, you're right.
Run amok.
Right. The proposed rule says no state funds shall be used to purchase or acquire materials in any form that appeal to the prurient interest of any minor.
Yeah.
And
which is right out of obscenity law.
Right. And any minor would be 0 years old to 17. So that's where they kind of start on that. And the definition of prurient, if anyone needs that, is marked by or arousing an immoderate or unwholesome interest or desire.
Nothing subjective about any
pretty
of that.
Fucking mild. Like, no state funds shall be used to
immoderate.
Right.
What does that even mean?
If they just arouse an immoderate interest in you, no state funds. And so, you know, the star, and they also say that no minor should be able to check out any book at all without a parent's permission. Like, every library is now an adult bookstore, basically.
Right. So and
it's just insane. But, you know, all the implications, you know, we can't just say things are insane and that's why they should be scrapped.
Right. What's the implication mean?
I do want to say now that Sean saying prurient should be a drop. I don't know why or what it's for.
Anytime they're arousing immoderate interest, we should be actually...
Ding.
That should be a show. That might be a new show. Arousing immoderate interest.
But you're right. We can't just say it's idiotic. We have to say why it's what's so
it's idiotic because there is already obscenity law in the United States. And prurient interest is a legal term. Obscenity is a legal term. They have been defined by the Supreme Court for decades and decades and decades and decades. And there's a ton of case law out there about what does and doesn't qualify as obscenity or what would appeal to the prurient interests of anybody, especially minors. And one of the main parts of that case law is that it has to be based on community standards. And they use that word in the proposed rule, community standards. But what they don't do is tie it to the actual current legal definitions. And they're trying to redefine it to be this easier hurdle to cross because it's actually a very high burden. It's a very high bar to have something labeled as obscenity or appealing to the prurient interest of a minor.
Because it's a free fucking country.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a First Amendment issue. And so we're talking about a higher standard that you have to deal with here. It's not strict scrutiny because it's not a protected class issue. But it is a higher level. It's an intermediate scrutiny case. And so there's a harder test that you have to pass. And that let me Sean, do you have your black letter ready on obscenity? Is that still in there rattling around?
The Black's Law Dictionary?
Like the, you know, what is the community standard?
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's very law school.
And I actually never had that dictionary. That's why I said
that. It's a good dictionary. But these community standards, it's not what you think or I think or our neighbors think or our town or our county or our state. It's a broad national interest. And anything that would have any type of scientific, artistic, political, literary, or other social value doesn't qualify. It's not a prurient piece. So, something that might be prurient is pornography. Straight up pornography would appeal to the prurient interest because it has no other purpose other than to arouse immoderate feelings.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, think of all the books Slaughterhouse when you're like an 11-year-old boy that could have. Well, yeah.
How about just like
there's great classic literature, but there's also just stuff that's completely benign that would like give a 12-year-old a boner. Well,
and like also, this is what's so ridiculous about like. I'm just gonna say like true. This is like one of these other stupid bombs,
right?
That they like it's the Wile E. Coyote, like he's got it in his hand and it's like it's the fuse has been lit and he doesn't know what to do with it and he's just standing there like an idiot holding onto it.
Right. The fuse is out and he's just blinking now and we're waiting for it to explode.
That's correct. Yeah. So this is still just sort of like this weird post-COVID theater that we're living through, which is just sort of this hellscape of extremism on the Republican side.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not real. Like, obviously, Jay Ashcroft doesn't truly believe that there's pornography lurking behind every bookshelf.
And I've had some folks who have specifically talked with him who have been like, well, he's just like, oh, that's not really what I mean by it.
Yeah, what he means by it is he wants to be in the news and wants to be spoken about because he wants to run for governor. It's pretty pathetic. But yeah, I think it's going to be a big
mistake. I don't think it's
going
to become a rule anyway.
I don't think so either.
And the ACLU's lawsuit was for a school that has banned some books already. So the folks who say, oh, it's not going to lead to book banning, it has, it did. There's a lawsuit, and I actually had said
several, right? Like there's several districts that have banned several books, and
this was kind of the first one to bubble up. And I had said when I was talking to the light writer, because I was like, I said the ACLU is going to file a lawsuit. I don't know when, and it was like 2 days later the ACLU filed a lawsuit.
They're really good like that.
Can I do a sub true or false with this before we move on?
Yeah, wrap it up.
Go ahead, Sean.
I gotta say one thing. So the implication, right? If one parent can challenge what's in the library, then they're making a decision.
And it's
that
not even
infringes...
parent, it's person.
Right. Well, one person in town shouldn't be able to infringe on everybody else's freedom to get books, learn, read. Like, that's not how it works here.
Yeah. Rachel, wrap it up.
I just ran out of air for this particular issue. Oh, this is what I was going to say. One of the reasons that people like Jay Ashcroft throughout my life have done and will continue to do stunts like this is because it serves two purposes. One, it serves three purposes. One, it tickles the base. They go, ooh, yes, I hate porn. It gets him in the headlines, and it forces the ACLU to spend money.
Right.
So it divides and conquers, which is, you know, kind of always the purpose of the really sort of intelligent extreme right wing people, is to force the so-called leftists to file lawsuit after lawsuit to protect things that we are inalienably guaranteed.
well said. All right, let's
wasn't as good
on.
As wait, can I hear Sean Diller say prurient, please, one more time? Go ahead, Sean, drop it.
Well, I don't have prurient.
All right.
Doesn't even seem like a real word.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a real word. You're right. All right. I'm just, you know what? We're going to start this here.
Our country's God-woven foundation. This is the Democrats' priority. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you my priority. Protect religious liberty, protect people of faith, and protect Americans who believe in the true meaning of marriage. I hope and pray that my colleagues will find the courage to join me in opposing this misguided and this dangerous bill. And I yield back.
So that was soon to be former congresswoman and excellent football helmet hair haver Vicky Hartzler. I just
opposing the Respect for Marriage Act. That's what she was talking about. She was talking about the Respect for Marriage Act, and she's going to vote against it. That's what she was doing.
She voted for it.
No, she didn't.
Didn't she?
No, Ann Wagner did.
Oh, Wagner voted for it.
Well, yeah. Oh my God! Oh no! No! I mean, I would. You could push me over with a feather if Vicky Hartzler voted for that. No, Ann Wagner, as is her wont, in being the world's biggest hypocrite, silently was like, "Yeah, sure. I'm not that stupid." She represents the suburban district. She's not that dumb. Anyway,
I wrote it here, Vicky Hartzler's last and probably only major input in Congress was to fake cry so hard about marriage equality that she turned into a joke.
It's so funny because it's like the bill, the Respect for Marriage Act, is about codifying law that has been Supreme Court law. It's been law in the United States for years.
Yeah.
Like,
and also, by the way,
several years.
And it's codified in many, many states.
I also just want to say, not just same-sex marriage, also interracial marriage. Interracial marriage was never passed in Congress. It was the Loving decision.
Right.
So these are really important things that everybody's like, just to be sure, we don't know if Clarence Thomas wakes up cranky. You know what I mean? Like, he might just be like, black people, white people, I'm different. You know what I mean? Like,
we've talked about this before. We're talking about the act passing and how monumental that was. But it's like, everybody knows why this matters. It's like, there are benefits called Social Security and survivor benefits and veterans benefits that have to do with spouses and families and like
taxes.
Jesus.
Inheritance taxes. God. If your spouse dies, You just get their benefits. You get it's common property. You don't pay income tax on it.
It's also one of those really basic liberty interest things. And this is, so if you want to know if a person who says uses the word libertarian to describe themselves, if they're a libertarian or if they're a Republican who likes to say racist things, this is a great litmus test, because the real libertarians out there are like, why is anybody opposing this? Right. If anything, we shouldn't have to have the government involved in marriage because it's a contractual relationship between two people. But if we're going to have the government involved, it damn sure shouldn't discriminate against anybody. Like,
right. There should just be a stack of marriage licenses and everyone should just be able to grab one.
Yeah. Like, you want one? Here you go. Like, it's insane.
Can I admit something? Because we'll probably never talk about Vicky Hartzler again.
That's true. This
context
might be
of
it.
Her being a lawmaker. I've never seen her. I don't think I've ever seen her speak.
Yeah.
Because like I read about the awful shit she says. I see the awful shit she said when I was on Twitter. I didn't feel like I needed to. She's not on any major committees.
They don't let her on the mic often.
Right. Right. Exactly. Because she's a lunatic. And they know that like any Republican with a pulse is going to win her district. So it's not like they have to like make her a thing, unlike Wagner, who's like very high profile and whatever. So I didn't even know what her voice sounded like. And I immediately just thought of Anne from Arrested Development. That's exactly what's in my head. And all the Anne jokes.
Her?
Yeah, her? Like, exactly. And like all the Anne jokes just start, like that's as
plain
that's
as the egg on the Anne egg on egg's face.
Yeah. The Anne, yeah. That's as plain as the Anne as the nose on plane's face.
Yeah. Right.
Way to plant Anne.
Way to plant. So yeah, that's the end.
Her deal as she's leaving Congress, like the only time she broke through into the national news was for anti-LGBT hate. Like that's what she did. The whole time she was there. What a waste of time. That's why she's crying.
And then
she's wasted her entire life.
Let's give the claps to her nephew, Andrew, who was able to use it to springboard twice as high as she did, to put out a great message. And you know, kudos to him for doing that and putting that out there. And you know, it's great. You know, that's like, it's like a silver lining, is like she did this thing and it was so insane and ridiculous that it just turned into like a better conversation with people being able to be like, no, this is insane. This is stupid. Like, why are you crying about this? And then the screenshot of her aide that's just like totally side-eyed at her while she's doing it.
Well, think about like let's remember that like it was her press person, her press liaison or whatever. He was married to that young Missouri lawmaker who didn't win her primary for Vicky's seat.
Yep.
I said the seat that Ms. Hartzler currently occupies. And like there is that weird, like that was, he died of COVID.
Yep.
And like they tried to make us mourn him as if he was just struck down dead from some fluke thing when bragged about how he wasn't going to get that Satan vaccine or whatever. So if this is what they're, so this is like, I'll just tie it back to what I always say about the trafication of the Republican Party. Like, if this is the religious corner of what's left of the super right wing Christians in the Republican Party, I don't think they're going to have a particular, I keep saying this, I'm not sure how they're going to raise a ton of money. I mean, they can win districts like the ones in Missouri and Ohio and Indiana and stuff, but this is not a part. This is not a national party. This is not a party that's going to win elections to major offices, like I don't know, the presidency. So, she should probably just go. I don't know, work for a lobbying organization, or
she will.
You know,
she'll work
for
something agricultural, and she'll make money and be out of the spotlight. So, very good. Well, let's move on to the buy or sell. All right, Kyrsten Sinema is now an independent, and the buy or sell is she's running for president in 2024. I'm going to lead it off, and I'm going to say that I buy it because I think that she is so high on her own supply. In fact, I am pretty convinced that she was not going to shift to an independent. I think that she was counting on the Republicans having a better November, and that she was going to completely switch parties, and say that she was joining with the voters of Arizona and understood that, you know, that the Democratic Party had left the voters behind in her state, and that she was going to join the Republican Party and help bring some common sense, and that she was going to use that as a springboard into the Republican primary, which is an open primary in 2024, to run for president. And that is my case on it. Before we get to the rest, I want to play this clip from Jake Tapper's interview with her.
Oh God, this means I have to listen to her talk, doesn't it?
Yes. But yeah, I want to play this because I think this is a perfect, this is like right in the wheelhouse of Sean's smarty pants category.
Fair enough. I'll allow it. Fair enough. Okay.
So the ever since Raphael Warnock, Senator Warnock, was reelected earlier this week, the balance of power right now is 51 Democrats or 51 votes for the Democratic Party. That includes two independents, Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont. But that's 51-49. What you're doing today doesn't change that. It's still basically going to be 51-49.
Well, I know you have to ask that question, Jake.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a DC thing to worry about. What I'm really focused on is just making sure that I'm doing what I think comports with my values and the values of Arizonans. So when I come to work each day, it'll be the same. I'm going to still come to work and hopefully serve on
do whatever is best for me by my calculations.
Well, my prove that I understand how fucking power works, Jake.
Really
kind of like you.
About what the mechanics look like.
Yeah.
For Washington,
God,
D.C.
I can't anymore. Don't make me. Yeah, I can't.
And that's why she can't. She's not going to go anywhere in a presidential campaign. It's like she's such a D.C.
No,
it's
just that she's running. The buyer sell is not that she's going
right.
to be successful. It's
I said
running.
That she's running for president. I'm buying that. Sean, you are thoroughly putting your foot down, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I'm selling it for sure. Yeah. I think she. It's really funny how confident she's acting in that. In yeah. that. Interview, because you know she's doing it from a position of weakness. She's doing it because the Democrats do not like her.
Right.
Even though you know
she
the
lost
White House,
the power
in her state
the
Democrats in right. her state don't like her right now.
Right And you know, if you are a Democrat, it's really really hard to get votes from Republicans when you run. And so you know, she is, and you know, when you're someone like her, she has infinite resources to run polls, especially right. of her own state. And her win, her statewide win in 2018, I think was the first Democratic statewide win in Arizona in a minute.
She was,
there might have been some.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. It was like 20
also,
years or something.
And she organized that herself, like at yeah. the county level. Like it was, it looked like Missouri from what I understand.
And she ran as a blue dog. Like that girl did not run as like a lefty. She ran as a blue dog Democrat.
Right. And either way, yeah. she's up in 2024.
She's up in 2024. Right. So she's got an election. And so this way she doesn't have to be in a Democratic primary. She doesn't have to be in any primary at all. And, you know, we'll see if people actually want her as their senator, because she doesn't seem, it's like, it's two sides of the same coin. It's like, are you not a typical politician because you're willing to buck your party? You're some kind of maverick like John McCain.
Right.
Or are you exactly a politician because you talk out of both sides of your mouth? You try to have it both
you
ways.
Make your decisions
you tell different
based
things
on
to different
polling.
People. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
I think
so
you
I
need
don't
to,
think she'll run for president.
I think what you need to say is what you said in our Slack chat.
Yes.
Oh, that if if she leaves the Senate before she's 65, that I'll buy McDonald's for the whole team.
Yeah, there you go. Dang. I'll buy that.
I bookmarked some of my favorite responses. So this one is from Ashley Loves Democracy at KUCKELMAN, Ashley on Twitter. It's hysterical that Kristen Sinema is switching parties when we all know that she's been a closeted Republican this entire time. Her 2024 campaign slogan, "Show me the money," with a Photoshop picture of her looking like Rogue from X-Men, but she's money instead of blue.
Right.
That's a then, really good description, by the way.
Yes. Rogue from X-Men. Yeah. And then by far my favorite one, which was from at Vet Skeptic, Robin, who I know is a listener. So shout out, Robin. Kristen Sinema on registering as an independent. And then she posted a GIF of Jenna Maloney in 30 Rock, where she's saying, "I'll do it, but only for the attention."
Zing.
Yeah. It's just,
and I mean,
it's perfect.
I think every time last year when there was a story about Joe Manchin and what do we do about Joe Manchin and how do we get Joe Manchin and what's he right. gonna do, I bet, you know, she's like, well, what about
what
me?
Are you gonna do about me? Yeah, exactly. Rachel, buy or sell and why?
Sell. So I don't, you know, I've seen so many hot takes that were so exhausting about her that I think I have a bruise on my forehead from slapping myself that many times there. I don't think she cares if she wins re-election in 2024. I think what she wants for now is to be the most powerful person in the Senate, and she thinks this is how she's going to do it. And that's all she's thinking about. She knows that she would have been primaried if in 2024. That's been an open secret for a long time. The dumbest of the hot takes I've seen is that now the Democratic Party of Arizona, that had a unbelievable, I don't know, Michael Jordan, midterm season. I mean, they just no net dunk, right. 3-point line, unbelievable. So they are going to have a ton of money. I sound like Sean, right? They're going to have a ton of money coming in from the party. Now they're definitely going to nominate a Democrat to run against whatever.
Right. Someone will be in that slot.
Correct. And there's probably some very good people that they have been floating. And I'm sure she was concerned about where she was going to raise money. And also, again, sounding like Sean Diller, and how she was going to compete with somebody who who's a kind of a more kind of inside respected, loyal, progressive member of the Arizona Democratic Party. And also, the Republican Party in Arizona is in a shambles. I mean, it's completely I don't know what is it. I think that they have a slender majority in the Arizona legislature, maybe, because any state with a rural population does, but they're not really gonna be able to do anything. They don't have a veto proof majority, whatever. So
it's just Carrie Lake in a soft light.
And Katie Hobbs is, she was the Secretary of State, so she's going to know how to get around those things. So anyway, nobody shed a tear for the Arizona Democrats. They're going to be fine. I think that she just looked at the next 2 years, I want to be, like you said, either she wants to be, it's hard to know with people that have egos like that. I mean, you don't get into the Senate if you don't have an ego. Let's be clear about that. Right. And the Senate is set up to be a functionally illiberal institution. And she, of course, didn't want to get rid of the filibuster, because here she is. She's now sees herself probably as the Mitch McConnell of the center. I'm sure she's thought of that to some extent in her own head that way, that she's going to be this kind of obstructionist sort of pain in the ass for everybody. But this is my, just since everybody's prognosticating and saying stuff that's ridiculous about Kyrsten Sinema, I don't mean you guys, I mean Jake Tapper and the rest of the smarty pants world. This is what I think. If I had to guess, if you'd put a gun to my head, guess. There's what she strongly dislikes one of two people. She just doesn't like them. It's either Chuck Schumer or Joe Biden. She just doesn't like them. Maybe I fair enough. She's young, she's energetic, she's an idiot. She's not as smart as everybody thinks she is.
She dresses like a mermaid.
She a deranged mermaid. Is that the tweet that I shared? Yeah. That was so funny.
Yeah.
So now I can't. Maybe Adam can pull the tweet up. There was something I
don't have it, but
saw something that was pretty funny where somebody was like, Kyrsten Sinema dresses for the vibe she's in today. It was deranged mermaid, and she's wearing a sequin skirt and a pair of
two different colored shoes.
Yeah, and her little glasses. And but that's what I think. I think that she felt she's been rebuffed by. I mean, if we're just gonna make stuff up, media, here's me making shit up. I think at some point she was rebuffed by enough people in the mainstream Democratic Party in the Senate that she just is not one of the cool kids.
Yeah.
She's not a voracious beltway person like somebody Klobuchar is. Klobuchar just you can tell that Klobuchar is one of those people that she's just give it to me. And she just tears the whole thing apart and just whips votes. And or somebody
Klobuchar has the old Senate rules manual from last session in her bathroom. That's the only book that's in there is just the Senate rules.
And she wakes up at 5 o'clock every morning, and people on her staff are like, God, what does she want right now? And to make laws is the answer. She wants to make policy, and she wants to make laws. And then there's just people that just glide through politics that break in a sweat. I don't know, whatever. You could name probably 5 or 6 people that are like that on the Democratic side. And she is neither of those things.
Right.
And so this is her way to find. So she's found her little niche, which is just called being a pain in the ass. And, dragging the news cycle with her by hook or by crook, and that's what she figured out how to do. So she's discovered some of the DNA of the Senate, which is pretty simple power because of the way the filibuster is set up. So,
John,
I wish she would have said, I wish she would have said, you know, when people ask, you know, why do this, Kyrsten Sinema? She should. I wish she should have said, the hate mail I get from Democratic voters is unbelievable.
I'm just done now.
They're all telling me to leave the party.
I'm listening.
But I hope I'll just, if I may, really quickly,
tie a bow and then let's go.
I want to divorce everybody from the notion that she is some, you know, Machiavellian, like great, like political mind, and that she sees, like, I feel like people just describe human traits to people in DC that don't exist, yeah, because it's kind of comforting to think that somebody is that smart.
Well, that's very DC insider, Rachel.
Yeah, oh, is it? Is that what I just said? Was
it like who controls the Senate? These wildly different parties. That's so.
Well, this would be a good one. It'll be a good one to put a pin in as we, you know, as the years go on,
no,
and people listen,
like,
to the show, we'll have this one to as a, you know, little humming bee.
As the past has shown us, people speak with their actions, right? It's never very subtle.
Yeah.
The Senate tends to be a bit of a blunt instrument these days. The tides have shifted. It used to be the House that was like crazy and bananas and never got anything done, and the Senate was kind of more like where kind of the beachhead and things kind of like calmed down a little bit.
Right.
Now that script has been flipped because of the way because of the way the American demographics have shifted. So now the Senate is an instrument of obstruction. And she has figured that out. Like, she grew up and like watched politics change during her lifetime.
Right.
And she's decided the way to be mavericky, I think, is just to be this independent. When she forgets that, like, the reason that we like Angus King and Senator Sanders is because they're super progressive. Like,
right.
And so, like, yeah, I don't know what else to say, except that she's just doing this because she thinks it's going to benefit her for the next 2 years.
We shall see. We shall see. Put that in the tickler file and people can, you know, for the you guys agree on everything. No, we don't. So there you go.
And now, the big one.
All right, the big one. For the folks outside of Missouri, you hopefully did not see this. There was a bit of a Twitter meltdown in the Missouri Democratic Party, some of the leadership folks. And, you know, we're not going to spend a bunch of time there. It's more about just setting the stage for what we're really talking about. But essentially, the last year's vice chair put some screenshots out of some messages from the chair of the state party. And they were pretty nasty messages from him. And some other folks did the same thing. Some folks who ran for office put some messages out that all matched, by the way, some pretty nasty stuff. And then the state party chair posted that he was going to speak his truth and then proceeded to essentially berate these people in a series of tweets. So Michael Butler is scheduled to come on the show. I am planning to talk with him again and talk about all of this. I'm hoping to have Genevieve Williams as well, who was the vice chair. But it's a very Missouri, you know, interstate thing that probably didn't make the national news. It's really not a national story, but I thought it was indicative of something that is a national story, which is that this meltdown really, to me, it says less about the Missouri Democratic Party, says a lot about it, but less about it than the current relationship of the larger Big D Democratic Party, the national apparatus, to states like Missouri, heartland states, where we have had some serious atrophy that has essentially been allowed to happen from the national organization to basically allow these state parties with lack of funding, lack of structure, and allow them to atrophy. And so I think that we have seen that. I think this is a symptom, I think, of that more than anything, and allowing folks into leadership positions that maybe, you know, maybe they shouldn't be there. I don't vote on those things. And so, you know, I wasn't a part of that, but it seems pretty bad. And I think it's indicative of a broader thing. Sean, you spend time in Democratic politics, you work on Democratic campaigns. This is something that you have, and you do it in different states, right? So you experience it in not just Missouri. You know some about Missouri, you also experience in Colorado, Rhode Island, some other places.
Right.
So am I just way off base on this, or is there, you know, some ring of truth to like why we're seeing this in states like Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the state parties are often, you know, a little bit less effective, a little bit less professional, a little bit less rational than the average voter might hope. You know, a lot of people, you know, who are not employed in politics, like they just work at a, you know, an office or a school or something. You ask them, hey, what's the worst part of your job? They'll say the politics. And so, like, if you are in politics, the worst part is like the politics, like the party politics, who's going to be the chair, how to, you know, what's going to be open to the public, what's going to be open to members. There's a lot of secrecy a lot of times. There's a lot of blame always.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, from what I can tell, it's like Michael Butler seems to have acted more immaturely and, you know, yeah, just childish, same thing, but even more, you know, like, right. Big baby. I'm trying to think in trying to think of the right things to say.
It certainly aroused an immoderate interest.
Yeah. But you know, someone reached out to him. It was Randy McCallum Scheidecker, right? Who ran for Congress and
correct.
Was Randy McCallum and Kristen Radiker Schaefer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so they just asked to meet with him, and you know, he just like pounced, like, this must be a joke after right. You spoke badly about the party. And
well, and Randy actually said, I'll take on, like, nobody, not to correct you, like, in this, I'll shut up, but like, Randy actually wanted, Kristen was thinking about running again next cycle, which is, it's very difficult to recruit candidates in a place like Missouri on the Democratic side right now. Ask anyone in like Ohio, etc. It's very difficult. And I don't know if she got a response, didn't get a response, or I sense that he didn't really ever communicate with her. He can clarify that. But Randy McCallion was going to volunteer to be the vice chair of the party this time around.
Right.
Which is like this thankless ass thing to do, right? And
right. Jewel Kelly, who had run for Senate and was on this show, great guy. He was going to run when Randy was willing to run to be his vice chair. And he did run.
So, yeah. And she just texted Michael Butler just saying like, hey, I'd love to talk to you about running. And he's just like, oh, excuse me?
Right. Yeah.
I am a child.
Yeah, it was not. It was really ugly. It was right. Totally unnecessary.
Like, yeah. And it's like, seems really impulsive, you know, and dumb. You know, I don't know. I could just, I don't know.
Sean's going to bust out the thesaurus on this one.
It's not prurient. So we have to think of other things to say.
It's not.
But yeah, I mean, he should be bounced out of the position, I think, for sure. As a result of this, you know, someone else should run against him. Sarah Unsicker saying that, like, my understanding of leadership is lifting people up. And, you know, this is not, you know, from what I've seen of Michael Butler, she doesn't even say like, this is not leadership. She says, from what I've seen of the current
chair, a more inclusive statement.
Right. Yeah. He's not a leader. And, you know, Sarah Unsicker, Representative Unsicker, is an amazing legislator.
Very serious, highly respected. Yeah.
Right. And she doesn't do anything impulsively. No. You know,
no.
The things she
says are true. She's very dry. She's very, yeah. Like, I don't want to say she's passionate about her job, but she's dispassionate in the way that she communicates. She's very, like, direct and...
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I take my cues from her, honestly, when stuff happens, especially on Twitter. You know, so...
Yeah. But what about the broader picture, right? We could talk about the Missouri thing all day long, but the broader picture of the bigger, larger party relationship and how it sort of allows these things to sort of happen where, you know, if there's no accountability on the way up, right? If they're sort of left to their own devices because the larger party has said, we're not even going to put our foot in that pond. So right. We don't know what's going on there. And that leads to, you know, it's like leaving your kid alone for too long.
Right. Yeah. And it's like the chair of the Georgia Democratic Party isn't going to bully someone who texts them and says, I'm thinking about running for Congress or I'm thinking right. about running for a party position. And, you know, that, so yeah. So like speaking more broadly, you know, the parties do have a lot to do with how candidates do. And, you know, a lot of candidates have complained that the party does not help them in Missouri and in a lot of states. You know, the party is just not very helpful to candidates. And, you know, the thing that kind of came out of this last midterm is that a state like Georgia, which is conservative, like Missouri is conservative and like Arkansas is conservative, can be a purple state and can be won by Democrats if you spend a lot of money and if you do a lot of work, you know, yes. a ton of on the ground organizing. And it was Maya King of, I don't know, New York Times, who made this point. And, you know, it has a lot to do with what the party is capable if the party's going to win in a tough state. And right. so, you know, she even said specifically, like, it provides a model to another conservative state. If you want to win a Senate seat, for instance, you know, you might have to spend a huge amount of money and do a ton of organizing. And the just completely, you know, anemic effort put forward by, you know, this party, you know, Missouri and you know, I can't really speak to too many states. Like in Rhode Island, it was very insidery, but it was a blue state. Like they win all their races. So it's like, it's right. frustrating. You know, I was working with a candidate who's a woman of color. You know, it was a primary, a Democratic primary, and she won the endorsement of Planned Parenthood, NARAL, all of these unions and things. And the Rhode Island Democratic Party backed another guy who was not even an elected official, a white dude. And the way things work in Rhode Island, in the primary, he had an asterisk by his name as like the preferred candidate, even though it was an open Democratic wow. primary.
Interesting.
Pretty fucked
That's
up.
That's insane. That's right. insane.
So the party does messed up things all over the place. But like here in Colorado, the party is, you know, just, it runs like a Swiss watch. And, you know, they targeted 7 state Senate races last cycle and won all 7. And so, and it happens at all levels. You know, it's like, it's hard to change volunteer led organizations. And it's like, it seems like it's a false, you know, choice between top down and grassroots up. But really it's about, you know, let's lift up the best people. And, yeah, I mean, I think the Missouri, it's like, because things happen so slow, I think the takeaway is that like the Missouri Democratic Party is like very far away time-wise from like being more effective as an entity, and it's going to be on candidates themselves. That's what right. I just keep stressing. It's not that big of a deal. It's just like the fact is it's going to be on candidates themselves.
Yeah.
So speaking of candidates, if I may, that was a great segue. I'm looking at the results from the 2018 midterm election where an incumbent named Claire McCaskill, you guys remember her,
yeah,
ran against the now senior, hate saying that, makes me want to throw up my mouth, senator from Missouri, Joshua Hawley.
Yeah.
She garnered 45.6% of the vote.
To his
George Hawley.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. I was waiting. No.
Yeah.
To his 51.4%. But I always look at like, what does that mean from a vote standpoint? So he got about 1.3-ish million votes, and she got about 1.1. All right. Right. When one Trudy Bush Valentine ran her race,
I think it was like 160,000 votes was the difference in that race.
That's correct. So it was pretty close between them.
Right off the top of my head. Now, thank you very much.
The points, the spread between Schmidt and Trudy Bush Valentine. So now the junior, I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm going to throw up again in my mouth. Junior senator, soon to be sworn in from the state of Missouri, Eric Schmidt won 55.5% of the vote to Trudy Bush Valentine's 42.1%. So you would, now that's a tough egg to swallow. And I'm not going to blame that all on Michael Butler. But speaking of, you know, it's all on the candidate. We said from day one that she was a terrible candidate.
She was a bad candidate. Yeah.
And we said the entire time that we thought that the problem with Lucas Kuntz was that he wasn't in Missouri enough.
Right. He just Not wasn't that he was a present. Bad candidate. That he right. just wasn't, he wasn't physically part of the show.
Present enough in the state. Right. He didn't live here full time. That was like this open known thing. And people need to know you in a primary. That's just the way that it is. Now, it's maybe some dirty pool that they trotted her out. Maybe she was thinking of running before he showed up. I don't fucking know. Right? Like, that's none of my business. I don't know. But I sense, and a lot of other people do too, that there was like this little thumb on the scale in favor of her. She certainly got some key endorsements right towards the end of the primary.
Yeah, and I'm going to keep saying it. I think the thumb was Claire McCaskill.
Well, yeah, that's what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
And I've heard Stephen Weber, who was the former head of the Democratic Party, And that was their pony. That's who they ran with. That's who they wanted. That's who they got. And she was terrible.
Yeah, she's backhanded.
She seems like a nice person. It doesn't have anything to do with who she is as a human being. She was an awful fucking candidate. And yeah, fuck
I bet
you
she
for...
would make sure that Sean had a nice dinner.
Yeah, like I'm sure.
Like, she would be like, "Oh, honey, cold oatmeal and carrots."
Yeah, she would bring over some like lovely like pot roast or something.
Yeah, delicious and pot roast.
I'm sure like, that if I sat down,
gigantic fireplace, like bigger than my car.
Yeah. And and she'd be like, "Why don't you just have dinner made for you every night? Why don't you just have servants? What's wrong, sweetie? Do you want to borrow mine?" So, exactly zero people that I know thought that she was up for a successful campaign. That was correct, and the end result of all of these things is now Missouri is less important to everybody. It's less important to the Republicans because they don't have to worry about it. It's just this thing. They can just like throw anybody out there. The only thing they were really worried about was that maybe Greitens would get into the Senate. They didn't have to worry about that for very long. It's not a good time, which means that like when that happens, you would hope the person who's probably going to be the chair of the party again would at very least have the, I don't know, the presence of mind to like show some class on social media instead of acting like a petulant adolescent, which is I thought what he looked like. I don't know Michael Butler. I've heard mixed things about him, frankly, from various people, but and I don't, again, like I'm not blaming all of this on him, but the question is like, is this because of the sort of what would it take, and you know, is it would it help if the National Party threw some money around? Like, yeah, of course that would help. But I have to go back to the fact that Claire McCaskill was a serious Democrat with incumbency, and Josh Hawley won pretty handily. I mean, like he beat her. Like it wasn't like he squeaked by. Like he beat her. We are a very conservative state. There's no getting around that. And I said in 2018 that I didn't think that was going to change until about 250 to 300,000 people move back to the St. Louis and Casey metro areas. Like that will be the difference in a lot of these kind of big statewide races that we're talking about. You're not going to get, that's not going to happen overnight, like Sean said. Until we get rid of the Electoral College, this is just going to be the way money shifts around in politics. The upside for me is that the Republicans don't really need Missouri either. The Republicans need the states they keep losing. So in terms of national politics, I don't think anybody needs to lose sleep over Missouri, which is kind of the problem. So Missouri is going to have to save Missouri, but the party is not, like Sean said, like the party, whether or not some new chair takes it over, probably isn't going to signal the end of our problems either. Is that, I don't know, am I getting at the kind of gist that you want to talk about?
I think that makes sense, and I agree with you. I think it is bigger than just the who's leading the state party, because you know, you hear folks all the time, and I see it posted on Twitter and other places where it's like, we need a Stacey Abrams. Like, okay, well, what are you doing? You're just right. Saying out loud. Way,
like, and also,
and
Stacey,
what does that even
Abrams,
mean? Like, how do you find
right.
a Stacey
right? And also,
Abrams,
Stacey Abrams like... is not the head of the Georgia Democratic Party.
No,
She ran a PAC basically. Like, she lost her race in 2018.
Yeah.
She started a PAC, helped out Joe Biden, helped out Georgia quite a bit. Kept her profile up quite, probably made it maybe a little bit too national. Whatever, I don't know.
What's it done for Texas?
An extremely
to have
smart professional person,
right?
Yeah,
what's it done
course.
For Texas to have Beto? Like,
right.
Not they much. Have Beto, I guess. I don't know. Like, so, but your,
it makes
your
us
point
look
is,
at Texas more.
Yeah, your point is well made that, like, in one of our frustrations with Lucas, and God, I hope he moves back here. Like, don't get it twisted. I really genuinely hope that dude permanently relocates to the state of Missouri and stays involved in politics.
I'm excited for Coons vs. Hawley. I think it'd be
Oh man, that's a horse race, and I hope that everybody gets the fuck out of his way and lets him do it. But I hope he does it with some humility and understanding the reason that he lost the primary is because he wasn't here enough. That's it. He just wasn't in the state enough. He wasn't here early enough
right.
in the cycle. He needed to spend more time on the ground, whatever. Maybe he knew that. Maybe this is just like was his grand design, is he was going to come here and plop down a bunch of money and meet a bunch of people and knock a bunch of doors and meet a bunch of kind of rural Dems. But
which he did in the midterms, by the way,
did.
After
no, he
lost
did.
That primary to he his did. Extreme
he,
credit.
He helped Betsy Fogel and like a bunch of people. But the Missouri, if the people who were kind of on the central committee should be showing some humility, because they had a pretty bad cycle. They abandoned a lot of people. Everybody kind of did stuff on their own. And Adam is correct that when that happens, the dogs have a way of fighting over the same piece of meat, right? And yep. I remember, like, that's what I thought about the whole, like, the kerfuffle about Jess Piper, and everybody was like, well, she should be spreading some of that money around. I was like, no, she shouldn't. So that's not her job. Her job isn't to, like, make money for other Democrats. Her job was to run for office. And she did. And she did so in a way, she ran her race the way that she wanted to, and she got a lot right. of donations. That's not your lack of success at raising money is not her fucking problem. But I think the reason that conversation was even happening is because there's no money. So everybody's angry and upset and frustrated because there wasn't any money, because Trudy Bush Valentine was supposed to like bring it, like she was supposed to like make it rain, right? She was going to like spread some money around. That's why everybody wanted her. And she was going to like restore some of the infrastructure of the state, which I'm still waiting for that to happen. Maybe she still has plans to do that. But because she funded her own campaign, none of that money trickled down to the other candidates, none of the other down ballot tickets. So I think, like, I don't know. Now I'm just talking. Now I'm just pissed.
Yeah.
I'm just, like, bitching. I'm just straight up bitching.
That's a pretty good place to cap it off, frankly. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is that people are upset, and it's not going to fix itself, right? It's not a problem that's going to heal on its own. It's going to take people being involved. It's going to take people stepping up and not saying we need a Stacey Abrams, but instead saying, how can I help a Stacey Abrams? Or could I be it, like, get out and do the work and work with the folks who are already doing the work, find somebody that you can help and get out and do it. There's lots of folks right now who are trying to do these things, not just in Missouri, but in lots of states. And you can help those people do it. You can look, this is going to sound self-aggrandizing. Share this with somebody, share this show with somebody that you know is frustrated about politics in the state of Missouri, frustrated about Democratic politics. Share the show with them and say, hey, here's a place where people are talking about this in a rational way. And because the having part of change the conversation is getting people on the same page, getting people moving in one direction.
This is what I want. Ready? You know what I want? I want the Randy McCallions and the Kristen Rodiker Schaefers and, oh gosh, I just forgot the outgoing vice chair's name. She's awesome. Genevieve.
Yeah, Genevieve Williams.
Thank you. I want all of them to form a pack, and I want them to raise some money, and I want them to open an office somewhere, and I want them to get a really good comms person, and I want the first press release for them to put out to go to people and say, look, here's the thing. The party itself is basically like, this is how the Democratic Party works. This is what it is. We are going to help outstate candidates raise money. That's the whole reason that we're here. That's all we're gonna do. And go out on your own, be entrepreneurial, understand how PACs work, figure it out. I'm not saying that the reason I'm doing this is because this is the thing that I'm good at. You guys obviously are really if you're passionate and committed about this cause of flipping seats, start a PAC, call it the Flipping Seats Missouri PAC or something. And just start raising money. Just start doing it. Because there isn't one. There isn't a competing pack right now for the state of Missouri for those types of Dems. So if you, that's what you want to do, then somebody has to do that, because the party isn't ever going to, if the party recovers, it's going to be because there's just more Democrats who live here, right? Like, it's not, there's no like magical thing to this. More people live in Atlanta now. That's it. Like, that's, more people live in Phoenix. That's what happened. So until that happens, you guys are going to, like, we're going to have to start thinking that way. We're going to have to start solving this problem in sort of an entrepreneurial and creative way. That's all I have to say.
Sean, final word, and then we're getting out of here.
Unless you're already in the leadership of the state party, like, just think of it as a non-entity. If you want to make a difference, like, think about
that's
running.
That's right.
And when we talked about running last time, you know, I said, like, talk to electeds about running. Other Democrats who have already run, and they will be way nicer. If you send something to Emanuel Cleaver or Cory Bush's office, they will get back to you. They won't say this must be a joke. And yeah, 2024 is right around the corner. You know, get involved and don't worry about the party. Like, if you want to run, talk to your family, your friends, talk to people at your church. You know,
talk to us.
Running. Right.
Yeah. Hell.
Talk to us. Right. Start running. Don't worry about the party. It's a non-entity.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for hanging out, guys. See you next week.
Thank you.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official Podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.